Welcome back to the Word for Life radio ministry. We have been telling true stories about the pilgrims and God's protection and provision for them as they left England and came to this country to establish a new colony where they could have freedom of religion. They endured some awful, horrible travesties, tragedies, catastrophes, but yet they continued to praise God. They continued to give thanksgiving. Our stories today are taken from a book entitled Thanksgiving, A Time to Remember by Barbara Rainey. By October 1621, the corn planted that spring was ready for harvest. The fields yielded a large crop that would keep the colony from starvation in the coming winter. Their hearts were full of gratitude for their renewed health and for the abundant harvest and for the peace they enjoyed with the Indians. William Bradford, who was only 30 years of age when he was elected leader of the colony after the death of John Carver that summer, was thankful for the harvest. As the new governor, he declared that Plymouth should hold a Thanksgiving festival and invite the settlement's Indian friends as their special guests. So a date was set and an invitation was delivered to Chief Massasoit. To make sure there was adequate food, the pilgrim men went hunting and fishing in just a day. Enough wild turkeys, eels, geese, lobster, partridge, and shellfish were gathered to guarantee a great feast. But when Massasoit arrived with 90 hungry braves, all smeared with ceremonial bear grease, the pilgrims became worried. How in the world could they feed that many people? And if they used much of their precious stockpile corn, they wouldn't have enough food supply to survive the winter. Now, fortunately, the Indians along the Atlantic coast also were accustomed to celebrating the harvest with what they called the Green Corn Dance. They thought the Pilgrims' Festival must be the white man's version of this observance. So when Massasoit and his men arrived at Plymouth, they too went to the woods and seashore to gather food. And soon 5 deer and more fish and seafood were presented for roasting, and the pilgrims began to breathe a sigh of relief and prepare the meal. When it was time to eat, the menu was impressive. Venison, goose, lobster, oysters, clam chowder, parsnips, turnips, cucumbers, onions, carrots, cabbage, beets, radishes, dried fruit, and gooseberries, strawberries, cherries, plums, and on it goes. Some of the fruits were cooked inside dough to make kind of a crude pie. The newly harvested corn was ground and served in the form of ash cakes or hoe cakes, a thin slice of bread baked in a fire on the blade of a hoe. The special treat was supplied by the Indians. They placed corn on hot coals, and the kernels blew into white puffs. Popcorn. The Indians dribbled maple syrup over the white snack and made popcorn balls. The beverage was a fresh wine made by the pilgrims from the summer's fruit crop. But before they began to eat, their spiritual leader offered a prayer to the God who had so clearly and miraculously led them to this place. Though they had suffered much, their experience was remarkably better than others who had attempted to colonize on the American shores. Plymouth had lost 50% of its numbers, but Jamestown in Virginia had lost 90%. The Plymouth settlers had successfully built a little community, grown crops to provide for themselves, while other colonies were totally dependent on supplies on the arrival ships from England. See, God had blessed them abundantly, and they sincerely offered him their thanks and praise. The feasting continued over a 3-day period, during which both pilgrims and Indians participated in games and exhibitions of shooting skill with bows and arrows and guns. The pilgrim boys joined the races and wrestling matches of the Indians, and in turn the Indians learned how to play stool ball, a game kind of resembling croquet played with a ball and wickets. At night, the Indians slept in nearby fields. The relationship between the settlers and the Indians was now so solid and peaceful that the pilgrims no longer posted guards. When the fun and feasting ended, both the Indians and colonists agreed they wanted to have a similar feast the following year. Now here's a question. Is your life one of grumbling or gratitude? Does it ever seem to surprise you that God made the Israelites wander in the wilderness for 40 years because they grumbled? You know, so many times we would have to send our children to the bedroom to get a smiley face or a right attitude because of grumbling. See, God clearly isn't pleased with grumbling. It doesn't make him happy to hear his children complain constantly. Does that sound like anybody you might know? See, being grateful is a choice. It's not a feeling dependent on your circumstances, as we clearly saw in the lives of the pilgrims. They believed that God was in control. They called it providence. They responded to the circumstances of their lives with a perspective that said, quote, God has allowed this for our good, end of quote. Now, somebody wrote in their book, quote, remembering our dependence on past mercies kindles gratitude. Gratitude is past-oriented dependence. Faith is future-oriented dependence. Both forms of dependence are humble, self-forgetting, and God-exalting. If we don't believe that we're deeply dependent on God for all we have and hope to have, then the very spring of gratitude and faith runs dry. See, gratitude is what we express when we take time every Thanksgiving day to remember God's past mercies and provisions, and then we pause to thank Him for each one of them. The stories of those who have gone before inspire our faith. When we consider those great saints listed in the Hall of Faith in Hebrews 11, or our pilgrim forefathers, or those men and women we know in recent times that have modeled great dependence upon God, our faith is stretched and increased. Their example of placing all hope in Jesus Christ encourages us to do the same thing. Now, Hebrews 11:1 says, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen, end of quote. And those who sailed in the Mayflower knew their Bible well. They were convinced that God existed and could only be pleased through faith, Hebrews 11:6. Someone has said, faith is a firm conviction, a personal surrender, and a conduct inspired by your surrender. The pilgrims were totally surrendered to God. They believed that He was leading them to the new world, so they went, confident that He would guide and provide. See, the Bible is full of verses on giving thanks, and our problem in America is not that we don't know how to be thankful, but we choose to complain instead. See, the Psalms contain a number of verses that call thanksgiving a sacrifice. Psalm 50:14, offer to God a sacrifice of thanksgiving. Psalm 50:23, he who offers a sacrifice of thanksgiving honors me. Psalm 107:22, let them also offer sacrifices of thanksgiving. Or how about Psalm 116:17? To you I shall offer a sacrifice of thanksgiving and call upon the name of the Lord. Now, why is it a sacrifice to give thanks to the Lord? Because being thankful forces us to take our eyes off ourselves and put them on the Lord. Giving up our self-focus is the kind of denial that pleases God. As a nation, we have inherited a remarkable gift in our freedom to worship. But we have strayed far from our roots and our heritage. We need to return to the faith of our fathers. Developing a heart of gratitude is the beginning step in growing a stronger faith. Remember what God has done and believe that He will take care of us in the future. And my precious friend, I trust that these stories have done exactly that. That you will begin to stop and realize, I need to stop grumbling, and I need to begin to be a person of gratitude. Now, if we focus our attention on what's wrong, oh, we can think of all kinds of things. But if we focus our attention on what's right, what's good, what's godly, it's amazing how God can begin to fill that list of things for which we're grateful. We have a little custom around our house of Thanksgiving. We have a little branch that we make into a Thanksgiving tree. And on that branch, we hang numbers of little pieces of paper. And on those pieces of paper are words or phrases. And we ask each person that's with us to go up and take a little hanging piece of paper off the little tree and read it and tell the rest of the group why you're thankful for that person or that event, maybe a special teacher in your life or maybe a special relative that you saw God develop some real strength in. And we just fill those little pieces of paper with things for which we can give thanks. And so one by one, we often do it three or four people at a meal. Then the next meal, three or four more people will take little pieces of paper off of our Thanksgiving tree and just sit at the table and tell stories about these people for whom we are thankful. It's an amazing treat to do that during the Thanksgiving season. And you know, you can begin to learn so much about others around you. You can begin to learn about the difficulties that they faced in their youth, but how God brought them from grumbling to gratitude. I would encourage you, make this Thanksgiving time more than football, more than just the big meal, more than just gathering together and spending time as a family, but make it a time of praising God for who He is and for what He's done. And as you focus your attention on those verses in Psalm that talk about the sacrifice of Thanksgiving, it could be that I'm speaking to some folks this morning for which Thanksgiving is truly a sacrifice. Maybe you've experienced a horrible loss this last year, maybe of a child, maybe of a parent, maybe of a husband or a wife. Whatever experience you have gone through that would enable you to grumble, why don't you turn to God and ask God to begin to show you what it is that He wants to show you about Himself because of this difficult time? You see, whenever you and I go through difficult times, God is trying to teach us three things. What does He want me to learn about Him? What does He want me to learn about others? And what does He want me to learn about myself? And so if you make up your mind that you are going to be grateful this Thanksgiving season, then those four stabilizing truths that I've shared so many times here at Brookside will become a part of your life. Number one, God's love for me is unchanging. Number two, God's purpose for me is Christ-likeness. Number three, God's grace is always sufficient. And number four, God's word to me is always the final right answer. And when we focus our attention on those four stabilizing truths, then whatever difficulties we are going through, God will make our hearts begin to be grateful. And Thanksgiving will begin to become a mindset. And then once that mindset becomes permanent in your heart, your life will bloom with joy instead of bitterness. And so I trust that this Thanksgiving season will be a time that you reflect upon the hardships of the pilgrims and then reflect upon the gracious provision of their God and His protection, leading them to Plymouth that belonged to no one, but all of the land was prepared for planting because God is sovereign. That's the same God you serve. Trust Him. Love Him. Thank Him during this season. Until the next time, may the Lord bless you in an awesome way.